This is Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sitterick. With the primaries behind us, the candidates who are still standing now turn their attention to the general election, just 2 short months away. And one of those candidates is Jay Gonzalez. He's a former Secretary of Administration and Finance under Governor Deval Patrick, and as of Tuesday, the Democratic nominee for governor. Here's Jay Gonzalez after his primary victory.
Now is not the time to lower our expectations. It's time to raise them. The only place we're going to make progress right now on the challenges holding regular people back is at the state level. Now more than ever, we need leadership right here in Massachusetts.
He'll be facing incumbent Governor Charlie Baker in the general election in November, and he joins us now. Jay Gonzalez, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's great to be here.
So, first of all, congrats on the win. That race had been polling pretty close right up to the end. Most of the voters were undecided. I'm curious, what do you think it was that put you over the edge?
Well, I'm very proud of the strength of the campaign we had. We have an amazing campaign staff. We had thousands of volunteers and supporters all across the state who were working very hard in the weeks before the election, knocking on tens of thousands of doors, tens of thousands of phone calls. We did it the old-fashioned way, strong grassroots campaign. And, you know, I was offering and continue to offer a message of a very different type of leadership in the governor's office, one where we aim higher, where we actually work to make a difference on the issues holding regular people back and stand up for every single person. And I think it resonated with people. Unlike Bob Massey, who's a great guy, I'm very proud to have his support now. We spent a lot of quality time together on the campaign trail. I also have leadership experience in state government. You mentioned I was Governor Patrick's Secretary of Administration and Finance. So I'm going to be able to hit the ground running and deliver on the leadership on the ambitious agenda we need. And I think that's why we won the election.
So you yourself have admitted that you face a pretty tough test here. You're going up against somebody who's been called over and over again the most popular governor in the country. We did have a WBUR poll from the end of June. 68% of likely Democratic voters had a favorable opinion of Governor Baker. How do you overcome that?
Well, I have admitted, as you've mentioned, I know I am the little guy in this election, literally and figuratively. I know that. But there were some really interesting results from this election across the board, not just our race here in Massachusetts, which reflect what's happening nationally. And I think what we have learned is that just because you're an incumbent or just because you have millions of dollars of dark money or all the wealthy special interests are on your side or the pundits and the polls and all the stuff that they say, none of that matters. What matters is people. And there is so much energy right now, so many people appalled at what's happening at the national level. And we're seeing an uprising. I've seen it out on the campaign trail. It was certainly reflected in the results in a number of races in this state in the primary this week. We're going to win this through true grassroots campaign. Everything I mentioned before that helped us win the primary. We're now in a coordinated campaign with many other Democrats. We're going to win. I am convinced as people understand the choice in this election, we're going to win this election.
Now, you mentioned some of those other results. I'm curious kind of what your reaction was as you watched some of those races unfold. Obviously, the most talked about has been the 7th District, but there have been some interesting results across the board. What caught your eye on Tuesday other than your own race, obviously?
I mean, generally, I was generally encouraged, not about any particular result necessarily, but the fact that the people spoke, the people engaged. Turnout was higher than was expected. And it's consistent with this energy that we've seen across the country. And this was the first statewide election in Massachusetts since the presidential election. And we certainly saw it here. It's consistent with what I've seen on the campaign trail. And that's good. It's healthy for our democracy. It's healthy that wealthy special interests aren't the ones influencing elections at the end of the day, but that the people are. And we're working hard to make sure we're engaging with all those folks, getting them engaged in our campaign to make sure we get our message out that we deserve more from our governor.
So you mentioned the president there. You've already tied Governor Baker to President Trump. Do you really think that's fair? This is a Republican who has said he didn't vote for him in 2016, won't vote for him in 2020, has spoken out about some of the rhetoric that President Trump uses, said that he wouldn't send National Guard troops to the border. Is it really fair to draw the comparison just because they're both Republicans?
Well, just one point of clarification. He originally committed to send our Massachusetts National Guard resources to the Mexican border to help Donald Trump enforce his cruel and inhumane immigration policies, including separating kids from their parents. Charlie Baker did that. We put a ton of pressure on him, as did others, and so he reversed his decision. But it's a decision he never should have
made. He didn't actually send them.
No, because he got a lot of pressure from us and others. It's a decision that never should have been made in the first place. We need a governor who's going to lead from the heart and doesn't need coaching and pressure and second chances to get it right. And I never would have committed to do it in the first place. But let me come back to the first point. Charlie Baker is not Donald Trump, and I've never suggested he is. In fact, in my speech the other night, I made the point that it's a relief for a lot of people to have a governor who seems nice and isn't a crazy right-wing extremist. But that shouldn't be the measure of whether our governor's doing a good job. And in the clip you played, you played the part where I mentioned that we deserve more, particularly here in Massachusetts. This isn't the time to lower our expectations and just be satisfied with nice and not crazy.
But you could argue that the high favorability rating is a measure of how successful he's been.
Well, I think polling is one thing. It's really easy to be popular when you don't do anything. You never take a stand. Your whole approach to the job is being cautious, not courageous. My point is that's not good enough. Not now, not for Massachusetts. We face a ton of big challenges. We have one of the worst transportation systems in the country. It affects people's quality of life in a very real way every single day. It's not good enough to accept the status quo. I'm going to be a governor that takes it on and fixes these issues.
I'm glad you brought up transportation. That's obviously a huge issue for a ton of people in this state. I'm curious. I know you've said you'd fire Keolis. What other kind of specific transportation proposals are you bringing to the table?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm being honest about the fact we need to invest more in our transportation system. I'm going to ask those who are doing well in this state to pay more in taxes so that we can make the investments we need to make to fix this. Yes, I've also said that I will fire Keolis, the private operator of the commuter rail system. I fundamentally disagree with privatizing core public functions like this, where you separate the responsibility for delivering the service from the elected officials who are accountable to us. We see it playing out all the time where Charlie Baker points the finger at Keolis when service levels are bad and says, oh yeah, they're doing a bad job. He's the governor. It's his responsibility to make sure it works. And this is an issue that is affecting people's quality of life in a very real way every single day. It is the number one issue I hear about on the campaign trail, not just the T, all across the state. And we're one of the worst in the country on commute times, traffic congestion. We have to treat it like the emergency it is. We need to invest more in it, and I will.
So where does that money come from? Have you looked at numbers in terms of specifically what we're going to need to update the transportation system?
I've said that I will be asking my Department of Revenue when I take office to immediately give me options for a progressive way to raise the revenue we need. Right now in Massachusetts, those who earn the most pay the lowest percentage of their income in taxes. I want options for how we ask them to pay more, we need to, because we are letting the people of this state down by pretending we don't need to invest more in our transportation system and our education system and a number of other areas.
Another investment I know you've talked about is converting the state to a single-payer healthcare system.
Yeah.
You know better than anybody how massive an undertaking that would actually be logistically and financially. How do you propose that we do that?
So it actually wouldn't be an investment. We would save money if we do it thoughtfully. We are spending so much, more than any other place in the world, on healthcare right here in Massachusetts. We're just doing it in a dumb way. There's a ton of administrative cost and waste that we could cut out of our system if we move to a single-payer healthcare system. You're right. This is a big deal.
Well, initially, there would be costs there, though, obviously, in terms of reworking how the system works. No?
I don't believe there would. There, if we go to a single-payer healthcare system and get rid of all the different health insurance plans, all the administrative costs that are associated with the work that they do, and I'm a former health insurance CEO who thinks we need to get rid of health insurance plans. So I do know about our healthcare industry. I agree with you. We need to do this thoughtfully. This is a very big change. It's 20% of our economy. This is a very important service that everyone depends on, getting access to good quality health care. But if you believe, as I do, that access to good quality health care is a fundamental human right and everyone deserves access to the services they need, the system we have today is not your system. It's way too expensive. It's way too complicated for people to navigate. And I believe we have to go to a single-payer healthcare system. If we do it thoughtfully, it'll be cheaper and we'll get better health outcomes for people.
All right, shifting gears a little bit. I know you have already reached out to Governor Baker's office saying that you hope he will sign a version of the People's Pledge, basically saying we'll not accept outside money into this race. I'm curious if you will also refuse money from the Democratic Governors Association. I know they haven't given to your campaign yet, but they did give millions to Martha Coakley, the former Attorney General, when she ran in 2014. What would you say to that?
Well, so you're right. Yesterday, we did ask Governor Baker to sign a People's Pledge, similar to what Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown did a few years ago, to keep dark money and super PACs out of this race so that it isn't wealthy, undisclosed special interests that are influencing the governor's race here, but regular people. That was the point of it. He promptly rejected it. Wouldn't even engage with us to negotiate whether the RGA, DGA...
Said he would follow the rules, I believe.
Yeah, whether the RGA, DGA, and others should be part of what's excluded. He didn't even want to talk about it. He's been relying on millions and millions of dollars of dark money from super PACs and the RGA and others. So
he does have millions in a campaign war chest from contributions as well.
He does. We tried another tack today. We've called on him to, at the very least... agree to not take NRA money in Massachusetts. The NRA makes huge donations to the Republican Governors Association. He accepts lots of money from the Republican Governors Association, which is funded in part by the NRA. He shouldn't be doing that. We need a governor who is not associated in any way with the NRA or subject to their influence when deciding important issues about our safety. And we think it's an appropriate thing to ask for. We'll see what he says about that.
All right. We want to end on a positive note here. So I'm going to ask you a question about how you excite the base for this race. But keeping in mind, and I know this is about a month ago or so, but in our most recent WBUR poll, in that by reference Baker's favorability, there was also a name recognition issue with your campaign. I think it was 61% of likely Democratic voters hadn't heard of you.
Yep.
And you had been on the campaign trail for months. So how do you kind of take hold of that narrative? How do you excite the base and how do you motivate voters for November?
I think more people know who I am now.
That's probably true. You're on
this
show.
Since that poll months ago. And let me just give you a factoid on this. Charlie Baker has spent millions of dollars on TV ads before the primary. The dark money groups I was mentioning spent millions of dollars in TV ads on his behalf. We ran a strong grassroots campaign. On Tuesday, we had more than two times the number of votes of Charlie Baker. So, and you saw the results of all the other elections where lots of people who the polls said wouldn't win, who didn't have as much money, Ayanna Pressley, a great example, running against a strong incumbent, won and won decisively. This is a very winnable race, and I am confident, 100% confident, that as long as we continue with our strong grassroots strategy, we're going to have enough money to support the campaign we need, and we make sure people are informed about the choice in this race, we're going to win this election.
Well, that's Jay Gonzalez, the Democratic candidate for governor. He served as the Secretary of Administration and Finance under Governor Deval Patrick. Jay Gonzalez, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Chris.
And I just want to add that we did reach out to Governor Baker's office today as well. The governor was unable to join us. Stay with us. Coming up, with Governor Baker securing his shot at a re-election in the primary, a third of the vote actually went to his controversial opponent, Scott Lively. What does it mean for the future of the state's Republican Party? I'm Chris Sitterick. This is Radio Boston.